Hey friends, mark your calendars. The Intentional Motherhood Retreat is coming up October 23rd through 25th in Portland, Oregon. It's a meaningful few days to slow down, connect, and refocus on what matters most in your motherhood journey. Also, some exciting news, Intentional Fatherhood has officially launched on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. So go subscribe, check out the first few episodes, and share it with all the fathers in your life. For more details and registration info for the Motherhood Retreat, you can go to intentionalparents.org, or you can go check out our new website for fathers, intentionalfatherhood.org. Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We're all four here. Mm-hmm. We've all made it. The last couple of weeks, it's not been all four of us, but we're here. Happy summer, everyone.
Yeah.
Happy summer.
Respond. I'm asking for you to throw,
happy summer, bro.
Throw the ball back.
Nice. Nice to have you back. Like,
great.
Yeah. I know. It's very much summer here. It's heating up. It's hot every day.
Oh, I know.
Sunny every day.
It's nice to have you back from your crazy trip to Michigan.
Oh my gosh. My crazy trip to, are we going to start with that?
Okay. I think it's crazy.
I was in Michigan and I was speaking, and the flight there and the flight back were eventful to say the least, to say the least. And, you know, I do want to talk about Grand Comercation, which is something that did also just get done. But yeah, what Phil is referring to, because we were just laughing about the comical nature of this trip. On the way there, I was walking to the bathroom. You know, you get out of your seat, you're going to the bathroom, walking down the aisle, and I just hear this thud, like a hard thud. So I turn around, and this poor gentleman had just like passed out. So I was thinking, oh my goodness. So I walk over and I help scoop him up and stand him up, and he's like coming to, and he was pretty much okay. After he stood up, you could see he just kind of felt woozy or got dizzy or something. And so I made sure he was okay. It was probably 2 minutes of just kind of like, hey, you all right? You hit the ground really hard. And so he said he was fine. So he was stable. So I start walking. Phil's already laughing. I start walking to the bathroom, and he's following me because that's why he got up. He went to go to the bathroom too. And so then I all of a sudden feel this person kind of like leaning really hard on me, on my back. So I turn around and just open my arms, and he passes out into my arms again. So I'm slowly falling to the ground in the middle of the aisle to sit down on the ground. And now all of a sudden I'm holding this stranger in my arms on this flight in the middle of the aisle. And I'm by myself because the flight attendants are, you know, getting drinks and food ready. And so then I was like, is there a doctor
around? I'm laughing because in the end he was okay. But
oh, he's okay. But yeah, he was the poor guy. I felt really embarrassed.
Just imagining you sitting in the middle of an airline aisle with the guy on top of you saying, can anybody help me?
Yeah, it was a very funny visual and very real. And so then as I'm holding him, there was a doctor literally sitting two seats ahead, and she checked his blood sugar and his vitals. And he had some condition that he was aware of. And he was okay, but I was, you know, it was a good 10 minutes of holding a stranger who was a friend afterwards. I never caught his name though. I forgot to ask you. But then he looks up at one point, he's the sweetest guy, and he just looks up, he's like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, it's fine, man. It's okay. You know, this happens. So I was on the way there, and then getting back, I got flight delays and all that fun stuff. But there was a kid that was sitting in front of me, a mom and two boys. And throughout the flight, I heard the mom a couple times tell the son, typical 12-year-old son traveling, playing video games, having the time of his life, hey son, stop eating so much candy. You're eating a lot of candy. I want you to stop. Like, this was before we even took off. So about 2 hours into the flight, I am sitting there And I'm watching a movie or something, and the kid's standing up, you know, right next to me. I'm in the aisle seat. And then he's making this weird gesture. And so I'm obviously like, something's going on. So I take off my headphones and I watch the mom. And I think I heard him say like, I might throw up. And so she's like, don't go to the bathroom. I have a bag right here. So she's looking for the bag that's in front of every, you know, airline seat. And she's like, don't throw up. And I was like, what kid, when you say you have to throw up, like they don't have control of that. So she's looking for the bag. And as she's looking for this bag, he just projectiles all over
He's like 12. So he's 12. He's not small.
He's not. No, he was a big 12. And he threw up all over this poor lady's shoulder and arm that was like diagonally in front of me, all over her leg. And the noise this sweet lady made when this happened, she's like, just like, like screaming and disgust, you know, all the things you would imagine, you know, someone else's
unedited.
It was bad. And then he didn't, you know, cause he was 12 and he was just, you know, felt sick. So he wasn't covering his mouth. He wasn't trying to stop any of this. So then he just starts looking at the ground and just letting it all out on the ground. And my leg is right next to it. So there's just all of this warm splatter all over. I'm wearing shorts all over my leg. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like trying to turn away and I can't get away from it. So anyway, he ends up, after a long time of cleaning all that up, my flight then did get delayed. I didn't even get home till the next day. It was comical. There's a bunch of other stories
there. You got delayed. You had to spend the night in Seattle and you're starving and it's midnight and you order food from DoorDash and somebody steals it.
Tell me that.
They walk
tell
into
that. That's
this
a
is
great
the
story.
The flight from HELL.
Oh yes.
It's like they walk into the lobby and say, "Are you Brooke?" And somebody says, "Yeah, I'm Brooke." And steals your food.
Yes.
And then you walk to a Taco Bell at 1 a.m. and you're standing outside.
So this
and
is the
I
best
said,
part.
"Served you right for eating Taco Bell."
Yeah. I was like, the only thing open was Taco Bell. And it was the only thing close. It was a half a mile away. So I was like, I guess I'm walking in Seattle at midnight to figure out how I'm going to get food. So I'm standing there right when I get there. They close the door and they say, you can't order food inside. You can order through the drive-thru, but you have to drive through. You have to have a car. And I was like, I don't have a car. I'm traveling. I don't have a car. I just got delayed. And so they're like, you can download the app. So I've never had downloaded the Taco Bell app, but I did. And I was like, all of a sudden. So they're like, you can order food here and just stand out the drive-thru window. Stand outside and wait for the food and we'll call your name. So I'm standing outside in Seattle, outside of a drive-through window of Taco Bell, questioning my whole life. Like, how did I get here? Like,
what am I doing?
I'm standing there and all these cars are driving by just curious. Like, are you begging for food? Like, I was curious if people were going to just start offering me money. Like, do you need something, sir? And I was like, no, they told me to stand here and wait. So anyway, I finally got home. I'm really grateful to be back. honored that we get to do what we get to do. But sometimes travel can be... It can be a nightmare. Yep. But you know, what fun stories. My kids were laughing at me, not really with me, I think at me the whole time. Elizabeth was.
I was basically sleeping the whole time.
She was so happy that she was not on this particular trip.
Oh,
she's
my
like,
gosh, yes.
And I was too, because like her, if she would have been in that space, I think it would have been very hard. So I was glad the only one to go through it. That said, before we get in today, because we're going to be answering your questions, which I'm really excited about, we did do Grand Comercation, which was great. And I think I just want to tell people about this because this is a really fun thing that you guys have been doing for a little bit. And I think it's something fun for families to think about, even if you're not doing it, you know, do versions of it. But I think it's a great launching point. So tell people really quick about what Grand Comercation is and then kind of what we did. And it was really fun. It was a really fun week. So.
Yeah, well, you know, we try to do Camp Comer, where we try to get every one of us together.
Yes, adults,
and adults husband, spouse, and kids. Yep. And we kind of want to do it every year, but it's becoming every other year. Yeah. So I think it was Diane's idea. I just like to put cool names to stuff.
Yeah.
So I said, let's call it Grand Comercation, which basically we try to get all the cousins together because they've been close pretty much since birth.
Yes.
And we want them to stay close. And we just have them all for a week. And the point of it is not to give the parents a break, although it does give the parents a break.
Yeah.
The goal is, babe, what is it?
The goal really is just kind of theoretical. We didn't grow up in Christian homes. So, you know, those of you who come from a long heritage, you could probably tell me whether I'm being too idealistic or not. But the idea is that when our grandkids are in their 20s and inevitably questioning some things about their mm-hmm. faith and trying to establish it completely as their own or not. Mm. The idea that these cousins could come alongside who've known them their whole lives, who they're safe with, mm. whose parents have raised them in very similar ways, could be just a whole nother voice and yes. force in their lives
yeah.
to remind them and to keep them in those kind of doubtful and healthy. It's healthy to get to this point, mm-hmm. but keep them from tipping too far over. Yeah. So the idea that Moses would be giving Duke a call when he's, you know, on call in college or yes. on college break and say, hey, how are you doing? How, you know, how's the fight for purity going? How's, you know, yeah. what church are you going to? So the idea of just trying to make, it's not really even so much our time with the grandkids, although we spent, you know, the whole time with the grandkids and had some really meaningful conversations, but it's really trying to have them together
mm. yeah.
and in reinforce
their relationship.
Cousins are a really special thing. And, you know, I had cousins, but we only saw them a few times in my life growing up. Mm. And so there, we didn't yeah. have that closeness.
Yeah, and neither one of us were close to our grandparents either, no. really. So no. so anyway, that's what we're trying to do. And then, you know, we did fun stuff. We took him to a county fair.
Oh, yeah, you know? So that was mine.
That was Diane's thing.
I found out the Deschutes yeah. County Fair was going on that week. And I wanted to expose our very urban grandchildren to a whole different way of life. Mm-hmm. And Future Farmers of America, by the way, Elizabeth Duke had never heard of. He wondered what FFA was. I said, it's Future Farmers of America. And before he could start, you know, making jokes about that, I told him, that's your future meals in America too. Duke.
Duke does they did not like the smell of the pig barn. Yeah. But oh, anyway, gosh. Then we got to go on rides. Then we had a lake day. Brooke came out and took them all on a jet ski.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, ice cream every night. I mean, come on. You know,
it was great. Fun, those kids, movies. Though, those kids go hard on. So yeah. we rented a jet ski, and it was Birdie and Sloan, who I'm like, they're 7 and 5. So I'm figuring there's just no way that you're going to love going crazy. They're like, Dad, faster. So I was like, okay. So I literally go as fast as this thing can go.
Yeah.
And it's like 45 miles an hour, which on the water feels very fast. Yeah. And I just hear Birdie and Sloan screaming, this is the best day of my entire life.
Yeah, when I took screaming. Them out, I realized they want to go faster and I'm going to kill myself. So I went right back in and said, go out with your dad.
Yeah, they did it
but
again.
We had Birdie great. And Sloan sleeping on the floor in our bedroom on mats, you know, with yeah. their veggie sticks. It was a blast and we're totally exhausted.
Yes, you are.
So we have not recovered yet, but it was worth it.
We surprised the boys, Moses and yes. Duke. My friend surprised me with tickets to Beck and Phoenix, wonderful bands, and they were in town. And I knew that Duke loved this band, Phoenix. And Moses does too, of all time. So like one of their favorite bands of all time. So we told the boys when we got done with jet skiing, we're like, and you're going to have to get ready quick because we are headed to this concert right now. And they're just, their minds are blown. Yes. They're like, I can't believe it. We had the best time. And it was so fun to like surprise them and go to the show. Yeah. I FaceTimed because I didn't tell John Mark or Tammy because I was trying to surprise Moses. And so I FaceTimed John Mark because he's always, you know, somewhere in the world. So I was like, I don't know if we'll get him or not. But I FaceTimed him and he answered when we're at the concert. And I couldn't hear anything he's saying because FaceTime at the concert's so loud. Yeah. But he has the biggest smile on his face. And he's just shaking his head like, no way. I cannot believe you guys are at the show. I've wanted to see them forever. And Moses is sitting there like, Dad, I can't believe this is happening. So it was just a sweet moment. We had such a fun time with them. So I encourage anybody listening, think about that. How can you apply that? It's such a great intentionality.
Intentional grandparenting. I mean,
it was.
We, you know, plus we just had spent time seeing our 2-week-old now.
Yeah.
3-week-old. Mm-hmm. New grandson too.
Yes.
So it's like
Stephen Beck's had a baby.
But being determined to be close to them and it's our responsibility to seek our kids out and provide these opportunities. So so any grandparents that listen to this, ask the Lord how could we do this something similar for our grandkids, you know?
It's really fun.
And our kids one at a time or all together or whatever.
Yeah. Our kids love it. Well, today we're answering your questions because you've had so many wonderful ones. Thank you for everyone that's rated and subscribed to the podcast. And if you haven't had a chance, would you just rate the podcast for a minute? It helps us so much on whatever platform you're listening, whether that's Spotify, Google Play, Apple, please just rate and subscribe and then leave a comment. It's always helpful for us to know how you're experiencing the content and gives us a clue of what's going on with you.
You are enjoying content brought to you by Intentional, a crowdfunded nonprofit that desires to help families and marriages all around the world in the area of discipleship and spiritual formation. This offering is completely free, thanks to the generosity of our growing community of Legacy Builders. Legacy Builders is a group of people from all around the world that give monthly to fuel this dream that we have in our hearts of seeing discipleship to Jesus in the family become a way of life. A monthly gift of $5, $10, or even $30 can continue to fuel this ministry forward. Our dream is to invite people like you to join and partner with us at a financial level and see this work integrated into families. So as you listen to this podcast, would you prayerfully consider joining us? Would you allow the Spirit to lead you, even if it's just to a few dollars a month? Thank you so much, and may the Spirit of Jesus give you wisdom, clarity, and joy as you pray about joining us. And if you want to join today, go to intentionalparents.org and click on Give.
Because we're talking about grandparenting, I just wondered, this could be a quick one. And I'm saying quick because I think we could go long on it, but I don't actually know if we need to spend too much time on it. But I think it'd be good to just touch on, because we've had a handful of consistent questions mm-hmm. around the grandparenting idea. And I think this isn't just for the grandparents. So if you're listening, I think this question also is for adult children, you know, you who are listening, who have kids, who are taking them over to your parents' house. I think this is also for you too. So this question came in, how to help my little one stop testing boundaries when grandparents babysit. So that idea that they're with mm-hmm. the grandparents mm-hmm. and they're like, yes, I'm going to push things hard. I'm not going to, mm-hmm. you know, whether that's behavioral, I'm not sure. So I'd love to know from you guys, and I have some thoughts too, but I'd love to know from you guys what you're thinking, how you guys approach this, because I know we were even just talking about this mm-hmm. before this started mm-hmm. unintentionally. So thoughts, anybody first?
You want to go start?
Well, my first thought is simply how we approach it is we honor your wishes.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't say, okay, at our house, they do whatever we decide.
Yeah.
No, like, so I'll just use food for an example, because I love to have, yes. you know, ice cream, gluten-free. I know they are gluten-free, so, you know, but if I have any doubt, I will text Elizabeth.
Yes.
Is it okay not if me. They have I'll say this? Yes. And if she says no, they've had, you know, then I honor that.
Yeah.
So I think that then as far as the boundaries, if they're going to push against us, you know, we just make, you look like the bad guys. No, I mean, my joke is, thanks. And I make them all say this, at Almond Pop's house, the answer is almost always, and they scream, yes!
Yeah.
But I say almost always, because your parents are the authority.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll jokingly say, nope, you can only have 2 peanut butter cups. You can't have 10, because your mom said yeah. you can only have 2.
Really feel supported by you and thrown under the bus all at the same
no,
time.
No, but I think that's important, because we come alongside you.
Yes.
That's yeah. the yeah. thing.
Yeah.
And this is assuming, you know, I'm talking yeah. to godly parents here who are doing a good job raising their kids right. and want to do a good job raising their kids and can talk to their grandparents about, hey, this is what we'd like while we're gone. You know, bedtime's important right now because they're tired. And so sure. we try to honor that.
Yeah,
right?
We try and honor that. But at the same time, of course, kids are going to push the boundaries at their grandparents'
yes.
house. They want to
yes.
see if it's different than home. And I think it's okay for it to be different than at home. Mm-hmm. If you guys, like Brooke and Elizabeth, you're doing such a good job with your kids and enforcing boundaries at home and training them constantly. So it feels like kind of a relief that we don't have to do that. We're not mm-hmm. coming alongside and imposing our values on your kids and like yeah. kind of reparenting yeah. them. We're reinforcing what you're saying. But at the same time, things are just looser at our house. And to me, it's such a relief. Mm-hmm. I enjoy them more because I don't have to confront things. I intervene when I feel like it's, okay, this is getting unhealthy or something. But most of the kids know it's just a little freer here. With the older grandkids here this week, oh, even with Moses, you know, we were going to bed kind of early on the last night because we were so tired and we had to leave the next morning early. And, you know, he's 14 years old. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'm not going to tell you what time to go to bed, but, you know, you do need to be up at 6:15 tomorrow morning for us to leave. So But if he had been my 14-year-old, I would have told him what time he needed to go to bed. But because he wasn't, I just thought, no, at our house, I'm going to leave that up to him. And he put himself to bed at a reasonable time. But we have noticed that the only of the tools of discipline we talk about in the the parenting conference, the only tool of discipline that we feel free to use that our kids respond, grandkids respond well to, is a very gentle correction.
Yeah.
So we don't, you know, bark at them or, you know, quickly correct them. We try and keep it, we try and keep it real gentle when they're there. But otherwise they look at us like, oh my gosh,
if
we're scolding them or something, oh my gosh, they can't do that. Grandparents just can't scold.
That's
their
not the job of the grandparents.
No, no. So we get to have a lot of fun with them. And I think that, you know, it should be fun going to Alma and Pop's house. But, you know, anything, we learned this a long time ago, anything beyond, like, you can't say, hey, knock it off. Yeah. They go, look at you like, who are you? Like, what did Bertie and Sloan say something to you about?
The other day, they came to me. This is cute.
This is post-grand conversation.
Post-grand conversation, they were. They weren't even telling me or telling on anybody. They just basically said, there was one time that Pops was kind of firm with us, but he apologized and said he was tired. And I said, so I asked him more questions. So I said, well, what happened? He said, well, they had called, he asked us to come to dinner and we weren't listening to him at all. So then he was more firm. And then I said, okay, well, let me ask you a question. Is Dad firm sometimes? And they're like, yeah. I was like, do I still love you? She's like, they're like, yeah. Do you still love me even though I'm firm? Yeah. And is it okay if you're firm, but then you take responsibility and apologize? Is that okay too? Is that the right way to handle that? They're like, yeah. So I was like, sounds like Pops is pretty normal. You know? Sounds like Pops was just a normal person having a normal
like
day.
He's like my dad. He goes, yeah, but he's not my dad.
Yeah, I was like, he's like a dad then. He's like your other dad. And they're like, but he's not our dad. And I was I know that, but I'm trying to say.
I told him they could call me your mom's dad.
Your mom's dad. They told me that recently. But on that point, I think that's the grandparent perspective. I'm thinking of like as a parent. So, if our kids are acting up and you guys come to us, what do we do with our kids? I think that might be a good angle to answer this too. Mm-hmm. And I know like even when we leave our kids with anyone, whether it's with you guys or maybe a nanny or babysitter or something like that, we always have the conversation before we leave. And it doesn't always work, but who's in charge?
We have a babysitter today. I was just thinking that of like,
yes, reestablishing who authority is.
I think it can be so helpful to really prep your kids well, knowing it's not going to go perfectly because you prepped them well. But like as I was leaving today, I looked at Bertie and Sloan because they would be the culprits of any troublemaking.
And the older ones are old enough.
I said, okay, while mommy's gone, who's in charge? They both look at me, Bree. So if she asked you to stop doing something or asked you to do something, what do you say? Okay, Bree. And then I had to address them fighting because they fight a lot. Like, okay, if you guys are fighting and she asked you guys to be kind to each other, what do? Be kind.
Yeah.
So I think they're most good-hearted kids, they want to do what you're asking them to do. Obviously, they're strong-willed kids and they might not always be cluing you in on the fact that they do want to please you. But very few kids are like really don't want to please you at all ever, you know? So I think if it is a maybe like a consistent issue, I would just talk about it all the time. Like before they're even – not even right before they go, just – start to have that conversation. Okay, so when somebody's here that's not mom and they're in charge, like, do you listen to them? Do you, you know, a lot of, as much as we can like pre-prep them, I think it's really helpful.
Yeah,
but it gets tricky when then they don't do what you're asking them to do while you're gone.
Yeah.
What do you do? And I think this is just one of those like brick by brick by brick teaching. Lots of conversation. So much of discipline or correction is just conversation.
Yes, it is.
So if it doesn't go well, which I always want to know if it doesn't go well. If my kids are not listening while I'm gone, I want to know.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a conversation about it. And we're going to talk about it maybe next time. Okay, so here we have a chance to try again of listening to Amma and Pops. Or, you know, but I think so much of it is just conversation after conversation. And then at the same time, I do feel like there's been times, Mom, when you've said, okay, I need some tools. Like, what do I do when?
Yeah, when Sloan's like needing something and not wanting to listen.
So Sloan went through that really hard time.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes. And she's, I mean, this during grand convocation, she was just like, your perfect child.
So developmentally, that was amazing. She got a little
nasty with Birdie a couple times, but quickly resolved because Birdie's also her number one playmate. So they have to resolve things.
They got to work it out.
We did go through that period of time, but I kind of discovered on my own with her that she needs to be invited into cooperation. That if you bark orders at her, you know, if you just say, okay, everybody come to the table right now, that just does not go with her personality. She needs to be gently led, you know.
Yeah.
The approach with that particular child needs to be a little bit more roundabout or inviting or not commanding. She doesn't do well with commands from her grandchildren.
Her grandparents?
From her grandparents, excuse me. So because, and I think it's because it somehow makes her very anxious and makes her really miss you guys. So, and yet you guys are very commanding with her.
I was just going to say, she actually doesn't like it from us either, ironically. Yeah. Seems to be one of those consistencies. Yeah. But she's developmentally in a whole new world. Yeah.
One thing that Phil's mom practiced so beautifully when she would have you kids is always first thing out of her mouth was such a good glowing report how much she enjoyed the kids. They were so wonderful. They, you know, all the good things. And then maybe I would sometimes get one thing out of her if it'd been like a week or something, you know, because she had them for some long trips. Maybe I could persuade her to say one glitch in the week. But that just meant so much to me as her daughter-in-law. Just like, this woman is going to love her grandkids no matter how they do this week. She doesn't think less of me or less of them. She just kind of laughs it off. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be that.
Sure.
I wanted to be like Ruth Comer. I still want to be with like Ruth Comer.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah. I miss my mom every day.
Yeah. And what I don't think the parents need is a report card on how their kids did when the parents get home.
Well, thank you guys for addressing that. I think there's a lot of tools there. And I know we've done a bunch of stuff even recently on the whole grandparenting. Yeah. We just talked about that actually. So listen to that episode. It will be just a few episodes past. We'll put it in the show notes. But I wanted to address fear in general because there's like generalities around fear. And then I also want to talk about, there's been of course, as people are about to get into school, how to juggle, you know, homeschooling and life essentially and all that. And how do you choose between this and that? And
I've got it all figured out.
If you can't sense the sarcasm and tone in Elizabeth's voice. Welcome to the club of pain. I don't even understand how, I mean, we can tell you what we're doing, but I think that it's not always the best, but we're in the middle of figuring that out. But I want to talk about this idea of fear. So this one particular person had asked like four questions in a row. And we don't need to go into necessarily all the details of the questions, but what was arising through these questions was basically, how do you deal with the evil and pain of the world? Things like knowing and understanding that child sex trafficking is a thing, you know, it is a thing and you have to be aware of it. But, you know, there's a line where it just becomes, when you, you know, get into it, it can be very, very obviously
all consuming
and so hard for your soul to even engage with even the thought of this stuff. So I understand that. And then, you know, different ideas of how do you actually know that this is in the world and know that this is things that happen to other people, evil, right? And then how do you have your own kids and then be preventative, but at the same time not become all consumed by fear that this could or would happen to you? And what would life be like if that happened, and kind of catastrophizing the future? So instead of asking the exact question, I would say, how do we deal with catastrophic fear in parenting? You know, what if my child gets in a car accident when they start driving? What if they get kidnapped? I mean, every parent is thinking this, like you're living this proactive way all the time. So, you know, we're just going to put truth to it, language to it. So yeah, let's talk about fear in parenting. And I think the first thing I just want to say is this is very normal, like to have to be aware enough of the evil in the world, but then have to have the hope and the trust that God is actually in control. God is actually present, but it is really challenging to, I think, sit in the middle. So I'd love some thoughts. I know, Phil, maybe could you start us with some scripture? I know 1 Timothy or is it 2 Timothy? Or you had a couple of verses. I won't tell you where to start, but I'd love for maybe us to talk about the reality of fear and what Jesus does with our fear. We have a new offering for you. If you would like to receive daily or weekly text messages and encouragement around parenting, marriage, with prayers and scriptures, click the link in the show notes and we would love to send those to you. Can't wait to connect more with you.
One of the most used phrases in the Bible is do not fear.
Yes.
You know, that's a great, and of course, whenever people saw an angel, you know, they were terrified. And the first thing the angel said is do not fear. Do not be afraid. So I think God knows that, of course, we're going to be afraid. We live in a fallen, broken world. Jesus said that in this world, you shall have tribulation, but take courage. I have overcome the world. So to me, as a follower of Jesus, we are going to have fears. It's in, you know, we're not going to bury our head in the sand. You're going to watch over your kids. We had a, before we started this podcast, we were talking about, you know, if you're at the park, you know, you don't just send your kid to walk across the thing to go into the bathroom. You can't be naive anymore.
Yes.
You know, when we're watching your kids, I mean, I'm thinking about that. Like, I look at little Birdie and little Sloan and, you know, it is happening. So it's what do you do with that? I think as a parent, you know, you're responsible. But ultimately, you've got to give your kids to God, and we have to trust the Lord that God is still sovereign, and He does overrule. But bad things happen to good people, including followers of Jesus. I mean, I just started Job, God's testifying about Job, how he's a righteous man, and then his whole world falls apart. And so, you know, a couple of scriptures that I thought of immediately is what we used to do with you, Elizabeth, and Rebecca, for whatever I remember, Rebecca. Did she have some like night terrors
she
or
did.
What? Yeah, she would have night terrors. Mm-hmm. And so I used to sing her a kid's song from Psalm 56, which is the scripture, you know, when I am afraid, not if I am afraid, I will put my trust in you. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? And I think ultimately it becomes a trust issue. You know, this Psalm 56, you know, it's a Psalm of David. He was terrified. He's asking God to deliver him. Be gracious, O God, man has trampled upon me. Then he says, you know, when I am afraid, I will put my trust in you, in God whose word I praise. In God I have put my trust. I shall not be afraid. What can man do to me? And then later on in the Psalm, it says, you put my tears in your bottle. In other words, God, you know me. And this I know, that God is for me. And God, I have put my trust. I shall not be afraid. He's talking to himself, but he's also remembering, you've delivered my soul from death, my feet from stumbling, so that I may walk before God in the light of the living. I just think it becomes a trust issue where we have to acknowledge we can't control. We're not in control, but God is in control. And I know that's a big theological issue. Why is there evil in the world? And we can't get into all that today. All I want to say is I think ultimately we're to go to God with our fears. And interestingly, in Hebrews, I just finished reading Hebrews. It quotes Hebrews 13 quotes Psalm 56, where it says, let your way of life be free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. And that's not a quote of Psalm 56. That's a quote of Deuteronomy and Joshua 1:5. But then Psalm 56 is quoted, so that we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What shall man do to me? In other words, Jesus is saying, I'm never going to leave you.
Yeah.
I'm never going to forsake you. You always have me.
Yes.
So don't be afraid. So I think that that's why we run to Jesus. That's where we go with these fears. So this person that's asking these questions, if she focuses on the evil, she'll be paralyzed. Yes. Because the evil one has come to do just that, to steal, yes. to kill, to destroy, to paralyze. He's the joy robber, mm-hmm. to rob you of the joy because you're focused on this horrible thing that could happen.
Yes.
In which case, you're focused on the wrong thing. You're yes. supposed to be focused on God who is great
yes.
and say, Lord, I have these fears. I come to you and he cares. You crawl up into the lap of your father and you yes. pour out your heart and you pray. So, and those are my first thoughts. And the other scripture that, yeah, we talked about is 2 Timothy 1:7. God has not given us a spirit of fear. Yeah. So if you're experiencing fear, fear is not from God.
Yes.
But of power and love and sound judgment.
Well, but fear is also just a very...
human.
We're created to have this fear yeah. response in times of danger. So I think that maybe when he's saying, do not fear, he's saying, don't live a life... entrenched and soaked in fear. Deal with your fear.
Paralyzed by fear,
and,
yeah.
And how do we deal with fear? It's not, you know, I think David says there twice, it's quoted, what shall man do to me? Well, man can do wreck havoc yeah. in our lives, can destroy yes. our lives. And so we have to be able to say, okay, this can be, but ultimately is that God is with me, no yes. matter, when the worst happens, God is with yeah. me. And when we can look at the worst case situation, say, even then you are with me and I will trust you, Lord. For me personally, that's the only time I can be yeah. free of fear. And even yeah. then I have to struggle towards it. And yeah. it's work, it's hard work at times not to be afraid, but to keep our
eyes. Yeah, because yeah. just saying, I'm not going to be afraid. I'm not going to worry about that. That's just, not going to, yeah. That's other. That's just stuffing that's elsewhere.
It. Yeah.
Like that's just bypassing mm-hmm. what is there that won't actually free you from the mm-hmm. fear. It'll actually mm-hmm. keep you trapped in the cycle.
The key
of
is
fear.
Trust. Well, it's trusting in God.
I agree. The thing yeah. that comes to mind if you're going another layer mm-hmm. deeper, it makes me think just of a couple really practical things. I was thinking while we were all talking about like, well, what is it that, how do I manage my own fear? Because yeah. I obviously that's what we all do that. Two things about this particular question and this particular person is if you're fixating on this and trying to absorb all this content and doing all of this research, recognize that your soul has a capacity and it's probably beyond that capacity. Mm-hmm. And your soul can't hold the world's pain. You can't do that. God can. You can't. So I would say the first thing is understand the problems and be aware, but also have self-control around consuming all of it. The mm-hmm. problem with the internet in our current time is yes. that you can consume way more yeah. than your soul can handle. So yeah. that's the first thing is have self-control with what you're searching. Give yourself some accountability. You don't need to know every updated detail and situation and statistic mm-hmm. to know that this is a problem, it's problematic, and it's something that you need to pray against and be aware of. At the same time, I think prayer is a big part of how we deal with fear. God, mm-hmm. please help these horrific things never happen to my family. And for anyone that's in them right now, would you please bring relief? And would yeah. you please bring me healing? And maybe God's going to give you a heart for this and it's going to become an incredible ministry. Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen so many times. So that's just practical. Elizabeth, you're
going to say something? Well, no, to that point, I think that's prayer is where we start because that's also where we seek God on what is ours to do and asking him the question, like, mm-hmm. is this burden and this overwhelming, I can't stop thinking about this. Is it because I'm supposed to play an advocacy role? Like, what does my role of advocacy look like? Is mm-hmm. it prayer? Is it stepping right into this and being on the ground, like doing something about it? Is it raising the next generation who are also going to do something? Like, we don't yeah. know what is ours to do until we start talking to God about it.
And I was even going to say, even knowing yourself, do you have OCD tendencies to get on a loop and stuck on horrific things because mm-hmm. that's how your mind works? Like even that knowledge of yourself, like, is this just the thing that you're fixated on currently? And does that keep moving? And I'm not saying that's an excuse. I'm just saying, yeah. be aware of that for yourself.
Yeah.
Well,
but here's another question. And Elizabeth, I think you're the best person to answer this because you've been reading that really great book, which I ordered mm-hmm. by the way, but hasn't come yet. What happens when a friend confesses to you that she is really struggling with fear over the things that could happen to her children?
You make
fun
of her.
Or the things that her children could do that terrify her?
Yeah.
What is the best response from one friend who's holding the other friend's trust as far as kind of bearing that fear with her.
Yeah.
What not to say, what to say.
I mean, I think when someone shares a fear with you, that's a vulnerable moment. Mm-hmm. We're all afraid of vulnerability, but need it desperately. Mm-hmm. We're wired for vulnerability. And so I think one of the best things you can do when somebody shares something like that with you is just to first just say, thank you for sharing, for trusting me mm-hmm. with your fear mm-hmm. and validate that that's a legitimate fear. I hear you saying you're really afraid of that. Because so often our tendency is to say, you know, oh, you don't need to be afraid of that. That's, you know, or like somehow.
Or some spiritual kind of band-aid.
Yeah. But I think just almost mirroring back to them, even if it's as simple as like, yeah, I hear you saying you're really debilitated by this fear right now, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think like just welcoming that vulnerability is mm-hmm. more healing than you even know, which and then brings out even more vulnerability often. And I think same, especially with husbands and wives, like husbands, when they see their, a good-hearted husband, when they see their wife's hurting, so often just want to jump in and fix it. And more often than not, the wife is not asking for their husband to fix it. They just want their husband to listen. Mm-hmm. And to
hold it with them a little bit. Yeah. Listen with compassion.
Yeah. So I think the best thing we can do, whether it's husband and wife or a friend, is just hold space for that. Because really, at the root of all of that is grief. Like we are carrying the grief of the world, whether or not we are conscious to the reality that we're carrying that grief mm-hmm. or not. Because we've heard stories our whole life. We've read news feeds our whole lives. We all now have the internet at our fingertips all the time. Like we are holding a grief that is the world's grief. And so I think we have to have a place where we can speak that out loud, mm-hmm. where we can get it out of our bodies and out of our minds and into our community. Like mm-hmm. we're all bearing this together. And there is such a freedom to just saying it out loud mm-hmm. that releases a hold, you know, that it doesn't then carry the same power over us mm-hmm. that like in our heads, the loops of thinking, so I think it starts there. And then we have to be able to process it with people. Like mm-hmm. your friend needs to be able to process it in a messy way with you, and you're mm-hmm. just going to be a safe place and listen. Mm-hmm. And after all of that, you might get to some practical, hey, this is what really helps me when I'm overwhelmed with fear. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or if it's somebody you know really well, I think that's, and you see somebody who maybe has a tendency towards fear, then that's when you share the scripture with them. You invite mm-hmm. them into, mm-hmm. I think maybe God's inviting you to release that fear, mm-hmm. you know?
And when we're trusting in God, mm-hmm. we are not trusting that God will protect us from everything.
No.
Because that isn't.
It's false.
That isn't the reality in our world. Bad things really do happen. I think when I went through my time of being so terrified when I was told I was losing my hearing when I was a young mom, my terror turned to anger because I thought God had promised me pretty much a pain-free life.
Yeah.
And and he hasn't.
Spoiler alert, me either.
And so I think it's really important that we're trusting God with the worst the world can throw at us, the worst that Satan can throw at us. Mm-hmm. And we're trusting, we're entrusting ourselves to one who loves our children even more than we do. Mm. And it is a mystery and we don't understand it and we don't like it and we won't really have it completely resolved until we see him face to face.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think this is a good conversation. So to answer these questions this person is asking, we're saying there is a time to pray. Mm-hmm. There is a time to trust and there is a time to maybe share with someone that can come alongside of you because mm-hmm. we're created to live mm-hmm. in community. But I do want to just say Psalm 56. I mean, to me, David, when he wrote this, he'd been seized by the Philistines. So he's like literally mm-hmm. in a crisis. And the subtitle of the Psalm is supplication for deliverance. That's a prayer. God, deliver me. Get me out of here.
Yeah.
But I trust in you and grateful trust in God. So it's like, you know, and this little song, I mean, I kind of want to sing it right now, but I don't need to. It's a little kid's song, but I mean, I sang it over my kids.
I think you should sing it.
I think I should sing it.
Because you can sing, and
I'm kind of not in great voice today, but it's a good kid song. When I am afraid, I will trust in you.
Oh, yeah.
I will trust in you. I will trust in you. When I am afraid, I will trust in you. In God, whose word I praise. When I am afraid, I will trust in you. In God, whose word I praise. And I used to sing that over Rebecca, and we'd sing it over our kids. And,
yeah, like in the middle of the night.
And you're training them and teaching them that, yeah, you're going to be afraid. And when you are, come to God, supplicate, bring it to Him, ask for deliverance, and trust Him. And I think it's, you know, it takes faith, but the righteous shall live by faith. And what Diane was saying, you know, Job finally said, even if he kills me, I will trust him. Like,
that's right.
You know, and so there is that trust that, you know, in this world, you shall have tribulation and we need to walk with God through it, but we can trust him.
I love all
and
the
praise him when he delivers you.
Yes, yeah. that is a great, yeah, praising is an important part. Mm-hmm. As we move on to the next question, it just reminded me, I was, you know, jokingly sharing this funny story at the beginning of this podcast of all these crazy things that happened. And Scarlett actually asked me, you know, in regards to Job, you were talking about Job, Phil, and all that. And she said, you know, are you mad at God for letting all that happen to you? She asked question. And I was like, that's a really great question. And I said, not at all. I don't think God was sitting here going, I'm going to make Brooke's life hard. And I said, the Bible's really clear. In this life, you will have trouble. You're going to have moments. Tribulation is the other word. Tribulation is a big word. And so I said, yes, I understand that you could, people have a choice. You can get mad at God, or you can understand the Bible, how the world really works. And how the world really works is that you're going to have problems even if you serve God. You're going to have troubles and inconveniences. And I said, Scarlett, think about it. Was I like burdened? Did something crazy bad happen? I was like, no, at most I was just highly inconvenienced. Like, that's not bad things, right? Mm-hmm. So even helping her see what was bad over the good. But I think even the more we can have that in our framework for our kids, for our own life, like in this world, you're going to have trouble. So stop being so surprised when things are hard. Yeah. Now, obviously,
I think James said something.
Yeah,
like
he said something just like that. So I think even, you know, obviously what this person was asking was the horrific things, the evil done in the world. And I would say, of course, we don't say that that falls under the category of you're just going to have some trouble. But I think there is versions and overlap there. So we answered that question. We don't need to answer it anymore, but I really appreciate everyone's feedback on that. It's really good.
But think of what you're able to teach Scarlett. So you actually were a 45-year-old Indian man who was in a crisis, fell into your arms.
Yeah.
And you didn't say, get off of me, dude. Like, you actually were the arms of Jesus in that moment to the guy.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm so sorry. You said, it's okay.
Yeah.
And then somebody stole your food. And
I'm
you
okay.
didn't
I'm okay.
You didn't cuss out the DoorDash guy. No. I'm sure you weren't happy, but you didn't cuss him out.
No, I didn't.
And
you
were able
and then somebody threw up on him.
And somebody threw up on you. But I mean, you were able to, I mean, you know, parenting is being an example.
Yeah.
Sure.
So what if you had to come to Scarlett and say, yeah, man, I just totally lost it. I was cussing out the DoorDash guy and I called and I complained to the company and like, no, you just said, well, I'm going to walk to Taco Bell. But I feel like that's really, you know, you handled it from what I can see as a godly man. I just hope it doesn't follow with you because we're leaving next week to go to Oklahoma with I'm going with you this time.
Yeah.
So
you're with me.
May it not happen.
May it not happen.
But
well,
think
yeah.
of the podcast stories and illustrations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe God was just giving us it. You know, I didn't think of it that way, but I appreciate that. You know, I actually do think though, you know what I'm always surprised by? And to answer your point and to make the point even clearer of what you're saying, it is honestly so alarming to me how kindness is so powerful even now more than ever.
Yes.
And
it is.
And it's amazing if you just decide, and I don't know, I'm not always kind, but I mean, in general, I don't move through the world with ripping people apart because I feel like that is literally the worst thing you can do to example Jesus to anybody. You're sitting, you rip somebody apart and you're angry and then someone asks like, what do you do? Oh, I help teach about their spiritual formation in the family. Yeah. Spiritual formation of the family. I represent God. So no, it never goes well for the business we're in. But I think that it's always alarming to me because people are shocked by it. Yeah. And I mean, I was joking. I was telling Phil this, but on every single flight I was on, all the flight attendants kept offering me drinks. Like, you want a free drink? You're just being so kind about this. I'm like, no, I'm fine. I don't need it. Just, but they kept offering me stuff, like wanting to give me things. I was laughing about them wanting to give me stuff. And I was just thinking, oh, this is a great reminder. When you decide to not freak out and just decide to not, you know, give people what they deserve, mercy.
Right.
It's amazing how it makes your life better. The whole time, my life was like, I had like this red carpet treatment in favor just because I didn't freak out. And I was like, this is a really low bar.
Because you were helping them.
Low bar.
You were helping them. And they, you know, they're dealing with people that are, flying's no fun anymore. You're crammed in there like cattle and people are grumpy and critical. And so here's this guy that's helping me do my job and they wanted to give back, you know?
Well, I have plenty of moments to mess it up, but I do think it was a great reminder. Kindness goes such a long way. And it's the way of Jesus. And so if you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. Last question we'll hit, and it's kind of like a couple questions in one about, we're about to start school. For so many people are about to start school, and, you know, a lot of people are asking questions around homeschooling and, you know, different variations of that question of how do you decide if you should go, you know, should you homeschool or not, which I know we've done a lot of episodes or conversations on that. We have a homeschooling course. And I also want to say, we'll put the homeschooling course in the short show notes. It's just like, you know, sign up for it type thing. It's a free resource. But also you and Diane, Elizabeth, you both did an episode. Actually, I think it was maybe 6 months ago now or so, or maybe a little longer, actually going into some of the details of this. So those are resources that are there. So go check that out. But one of the specific questions I just want to hit on today before we're done is tips on homeschooling. And this question specifically is how to juggle multiple children while homeschooling. So I figured this would be a great question for you, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. who's in it, Diane from the experience. But, you know, how do you juggle the multiple children while homeschooling? And I would just say to answer, you don't, and we're going to be done today. You basically feel like you're going to die. And then what was that joke that I heard? Parenting is saying, and next week everything will slow down week after week until you die. And next week things will slow down.
That's encouraging.
Parenting, it was a joke. But
parenting is giving your life away.
It is.
It is. A constant sacrifice and giving, but your kids will come back to bless you.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's a great premise to start with, right?
Yes.
Elizabeth, that mm-hmm. there is a real self-sacrifice involved in choosing to stay home with your kids and to actually teach them. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's incredible reward with that. But understanding that our walk with God is an imitation of Jesus Christ, that we're giving ourselves away mm-hmm. constantly.
Yeah.
Now, not losing yourself in the process, but really giving a lot of our comfort away.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Isn't that the truth, especially with homeschooling?
Yes.
Mom, I want you to speak into this too, because I for the first time, we'll have a kindergartner and second grader mm-hmm. at the same time this year. And I feel intimidated by that. I haven't done that combo of little ages yet. But I don't have a ton to say other than that when we first started homeschooling, I was doing it reluctantly. And it was not because I had this great vision of wanting to do it at first. And we had essentially two toddlers. And like young toddlers. And I spent all summer like writing lists and plans and researching curriculum and writing schedules and planning how it was going to go.
Is this might hint at some control freak?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Maybe.
I was trying to manage my stress. And it looked and still looks nothing like I thought it was going to. It was pure chaos. And in hindsight, I don't know that it could have looked different. I think if you're homeschooling and you have babies or toddlers, the only advice I can give is turn towards the chaos rather than try to run from it or even always manage it. I'm not saying throw out all structure, but I think that homeschooling is messy. And it's a little less messy as your kids get older, but I think you have to, I'm learning at least, we're about to start year five. And this is the least prepared
is it
I've ever
five?
Felt. Yes.
I have not
Isn't
counted.
That crazy?
That is, yeah. I'm sorry to be distracting.
How did that happen?
That's really, yeah. I didn't connect that. Wow.
And I'm the least prepared or planned this year. And I feel like oddly okay with it. It's taken me 5 years to be okay with that. But I think that you have to figure out a rough routine that works within your family context. So if that means you all have breakfast together and you start homeschooling at 7:30 every morning and that works for your family, then do it. Mm. But if it's not realistic for you to start school until 10 a.m. every morning, then do that. Like, I think that's the beauty of homeschooling is that you have the freedom to make it work for your specific family and your specific stage. And so if your kids are little, I think you just have to embrace the fact that it's going to be slightly chaotic. Mm-hmm. And in hindsight, like to give you, so it sounds like maybe this person is either newer on the journey or kids are little. Now we're at year five and I almost gave up every month for the first 2 years. Like serious conversations about like, I don't think I can do this. This is like not working. And I am so, so glad we didn't. Like seeing now being this far into it and the fruit that has come of it, I can't, it's still messy. It's still like, I have days where I'm like, this is no fun at all. Why are we doing this? And finally, my kids are at the age where everybody could be in school. Mm-hmm. I could have an empty house 5 days a week. But the fruit that we've seen in our own family and in our kids relationally with each other and with friends and adults is like so worth
it. Remarkable. Yeah.
So worth it. And so I just maybe to give you courage to like stay the course and figure out how to make it work for your family and ditch whatever is not working. And then wake up again tomorrow and do it again. I wish I had some like clear linear advice. I think there's so much of that out there. There's so many resources online of different things you can try. And but I think it was my mindset that kind of destroyed us the first 2 years, not necessarily my kids. But mom, I'd love to hear because I also feel myself going into a homeschool year where two of them are still in a very hands-on age. Yeah. My kids are spread enough that like the older two are now very independent. It's just managing their education. They're going to be sixth grade and eighth grade and answering their questions when they need a question answered. But this will be my first year with really two who need entirely hands-on pretty much kindergarten and second grade. So take it away, mom.
Okay, so a couple things, just, you know, also more conceptual than practical, to be honest with you. I mean, we didn't really have curriculum when I first started homeschooling. It was really hard to come by. Homeschooling was illegal, so it was a really different time. Now you have all this beautiful curriculum, but it's almost more pressure, you know, yeah. that you have to be keeping options. Up in all these topics. And I've been given really great advice from an educational mentor to me. And number one, and I think most helpful to me, was decide what your goal is for each student that year. Like, mm-hmm. where do you want to see them really forge yeah, ahead?
I do that. And then I look at it at the yes. end of the year.
And then yeah. so for you, for instance, you're going to start really introducing Sloan to reading. Mm-hmm. So the goal is she's going to be reading and liking it mm-hmm. maybe by the end of the year. And whereas Birdie will be a little different, you know, you're going to be, mm-hmm. and sometimes you don't know that goal when you're starting because you don't mm-hmm. actually know your student. You know, maybe your goal is to make your child like reading by the end of the year.
Yeah, and like my goal for Birdie, she's okay. reading profusely.
Yes.
But she hates school.
Yes.
And so we're not doing the hybrid school we did last year for her because my whole goal is I just want to see if I can get you to not yeah. hate it so much. Mm-hmm. Because she's so smart and she does love to learn,
yeah.
but she hates to sit down at the table and do any of the stuff yeah. we're doing. So my goal is to Where try some to kids take love the pressure that off. Kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The other thing is I feel like it's really important to say that if you think you're going to be satisfied at the end of the school year that you did a great job, think again. Mm-hmm. That's just, unless you're really naive, you're not going to be satisfied. You're going to know all the stuff you didn't get to, and you're going to keep hearing about public school or Christian school kids who covered all these things. And what my educational mentor said to me is there's one thing if the teacher's teaching it, but the real question is the student actually learning it? Mm-hmm. Are they really absorbing it? Mm-hmm. Is it fascinating to them? Are they actually wanting to go further with it? Mm-hmm. And she told this to me at a time when I had gotten really embarrassed because one of my kids didn't understand what photosynthesis was, mm-hmm. which is, you know, how plants feed themselves through water and through why they're green and mm-hmm. all those things. And well beyond the age of that child, I don't even remember which one it was, should have understood that according to the school system. But so she asked me, but is your child really curious? Can you make your child so curious about how do plants eat that they will go on search on their own for the answer? And that is the beauty of homeschool. That mm-hmm. is successful homeschool. Yes. Not that they know and can perfectly describe the steps of photosynthesis, mm-hmm. but they can get curious about how God made plants work.
And I would add, in our time, and I think this was important in when you were homeschooling us, but this is exponentially more important mm-hmm. now. Can they be bored and find something to do and yes. play
that's creative, so true.
That doesn't involve a screen, that is, mm-hmm. you know, and can they look people in the eye and
yes.
comfortably have a conversation, you know, mm-hmm. relatively comfortably mm-hmm. have a conversation, like, you know, and everybody said this to me when we started, like, so much more than just book smarts and education yes. and it's emotional intelligence. And, but I'm seeing that unfold.
Yes.
And I'm
me too.
Like,
I'm seeing it unfold in your kids
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, not that it's 100% attributed to homeschool, but I literally found myself just a few days ago when I was like, wow, I feel really underprepared about this year, reflecting back on, oh my gosh, I'm so glad we didn't give up, because look yeah. at what has yeah. emerged in all of them that I'm not sure it would have emerged if we hadn't stuck yes. it out. And maybe yeah. parts of it would. But you know, as a parent, like, you have a sense of like what, yeah, just so
yeah.
I'm so glad that yeah. there's so much more than just the book smarts.
Absolutely.
That you're instilling
and
in
you
them.
Can bring all of the Lord Jesus into it. And like the other day, we were out and I had just the littles, mm-hmm. Sloan and Birdie, 5 and 7. Mm-hmm. And Sloan looked up all of a sudden and noticed the sky. And we have beautiful sunsets here in Bend, you know, mm-hmm. over the desert.
Yeah.
The sun is setting over snow-peaked mountains. They're really, really fantastic. And she said, God is painting again. Look, he's still painting. That we went all the way around the, lake,
say that.
The block. And she said, look, God is still painting. Aww. And so I was just able to lead that
That's
into a
so
conversation.
Cool.
But that is the epitome of homeschool. mm-hmm. is that yeah. you understand that God is at the source of everything. And they end up worshiping yes. God instead of just learning about, okay, what's happening in the sun? What is physically, what do scientists believe is happening in the middle of the
sunset? Mm-hmm. It's so funny though, because this idea that we're homeschooling, meaning that we're smart enough to educate our kids, is not what's happening. So no. I want to be really clear that we are mediators with our kids' education.
Praise God yes. and, for curriculum and the internet.
And yes. because I think it's also funny to think like, I don't feel so educated and smart that I'm going to dispense wisdom upon my children.
You mean you can't tell me the steps of photosynthesis right now?
Nope.
I mean, I can hardly say the word.
You know what? I can't, but I could describe to you why weather patterns in Puerto Rico are
Puerto Rico.
I can tell you that that's not even a place. Eureka. Anyway,
this is a joke in our house. When I don't know a very like elementary answer to something, I'll just be like, "Good thing I homeschool my kids."
No, but I think it's important to differentiate. Like we definitely take the lead in their education, but we also use so many resources at our disposal to help, yes. and that's what our goal is.
Yeah. But you know, there are more resources than ever. You know,
and I think more than ever.
We've said this before, but I think we need to make it clear that whatever choice you do to raise, to educate your kids, you know, you're the ones responsible before God. Yeah. And so whether it's, you know, public school, Christian school, homeschool, be involved in your kids' education. And obviously we're big fans of homeschool, but you know, Diane was the one who laid down her life. I just said, good job, babe. You know, and I had a few things, you know, that were important to me, but I just think it's, God is painting again. That's beautiful. Did you ever use that phrase with her?
I don't remember.
She may have gotten it from us, because the first time I heard it was Rebecca when she was little, who just loves creation and anything beauty. Science. And she said it once, God's, look at daddy, God is painting again.
I'm sure she made it up. I'm sure it wasn't for me.
No, Rebecca just blurted it out one day when she was a little girl.
Yeah.
And I picked it up. And you know, I think we probably mentioned it when we must have mentioned it, or maybe she just thought it up like Rebecca did.
I'm not sure.
Like he is painting.
But the funny thing is, right now, every evening when I notice the sky, instead of just rushing on to what I'm doing, in my head, I'm mimicking sun. So this is what happens in homeschool too.
Cool.
They teach you.
They
in my head, I'm being reminded to stop and look, because God is actively creating a sunset, you know, moving the earth and doing all that he does to make it so beautiful.
He's speaking.
Yeah.
Psalm 19:1 is all about that. You know, Psalm 19 is all about that. The heavens declare the glory of God. Yeah. So it's like we're studying his creation.
Yeah.
That's we're supposed to study his creation.
We are. And that's all the time we have for questions today. So I don't want to keep going on questions, but
maybe at some point we should do, Mom, you and I have talked about doing just a very practical, not just for homeschooling, but just the practicalities of running a home and all the, you know, so maybe we'll get,
but check show notes, because
I'm imagining if it's anybody who's wired like me, who's listening to our answer to that, it's like, yes, but crazy. How do you juggle all of the ages?
We have done a bunch of other episodes. And so we'll put those in the show notes. And that would be the first place to start. And then, you know that there's more resources out there. And also you have to remember, when you're homeschooling your kids, this is important. Sometimes their pops will tell them that in heaven, they think that dogs are going to talk or something like this.
I do.
I know you do. And then Sloan's like, pops. Yeah. So I literally.
I can't prove it.
I know. So Sloan comes to me and she goes, yeah. So dad, pops thinks Jackson, your dog that had died.
He's going
to
be there.
He's going to be there. And he's going to talk to us. And I was like, you know, Sloan, I don't know about that, but I think it's a great thought.
We definitely think he's going to be there. Billy Graham said, how, you know, Billy Graham's
and
amazing.
Of course, he's
not
like
Jesus, though.
Heaven's going to be a perfect place.
Sure, I agree
and
with that.
And if it takes my dog being there, then I believe he'll be there.
I don't think he won't be there. I just mean the whole, like, I don't know.
Well, I think we're going to fly, too, but that's...
I told Sloan, I was like, sweetie, I don't know about that one, but I think it's a good thought.
And I know you want to end this podcast, but I just want to say, there's probably people listening, moms, who think, I can never homeschool. And I just think it's important to say there's so many resources out there. Like there are high school algebra teachers who maybe left public school, but they're teaching cohorts of homeschool parents out. Yep. Like, how do you, I couldn't teach algebra. I barely understood algebra because my teacher had, he was senile, but he had tenure. So he kept Mr. Corbellini. Nobody understood it unless you got it yourself. But I feel like there's algebra teachers out there and there's science teachers out there and there's
we have friends
hybrid schools.
Our like homeschool charter alone that we're a part of now, they've really grown over the last couple of years. All day Monday, they basically offer all of the core subjects that they teach them. It's virtual. So your kid is on a computer. Yeah. Yeah. But then you just facilitate all through the rest of the week. Like they tell you what to do. There's just, and they're, everything's free.
So it's many all, things. Wow. Yeah.
And they're all like teachers who've taught for 20, 30 years.
I have some friends that are financially okay. And they've just decided to skip the whole thing and hire a private teacher that teaches all three of their kids.
Tutor.
Yeah. It's a private, but they're instead of, you know, they can pay them a little bit more than they would make in the education system.
Wow.
And then they can travel with them. So that's what some friends that had resources did. They just said, you know, it actually makes more sense because it's, we want them to have, they had those values and then they had the resources to do it. So that's what they decided. But that said, I think there is all sorts of new things coming out now that you can do that are all that you can have no money. You can have a lot of money. It doesn't really matter anywhere in between. There's so many new resources. So get curious.
One last thing is remember you don't want to set up your homeschool so that perfectly imitates the way classrooms are set up.
No.
Classrooms, you've got 25 to 30 kids in there. Classrooms originated out of trying to set up a way to educate kids all together to free up parents to do whatever they needed to be doing. So in homeschooling, you are tutoring and tutoring. Even through the public schools, kids with medical difficulties who need to be tutored, it's just a couple hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Birdie for kindergarten, this is what I'm holding on to hope for this year for Sloan for kindergarten. But Birdie could only handle about 45 minutes a day. Yeah. And she fully learned to read and all the math stuff she needed to learn in 45 minutes a day of kindergarten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Thank you for all your questions, everyone. Keep sending them in, and we can't wait to do another Q&R episode. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit, and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram at intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.